This podcast is a presentation of UCTV.tv, University of California Television. Like what you learn? Help others discover UCTV podcasts by leaving a comment or rating in iTunes.
Welcome to Profiles in Discovery. Our guest today is Dr. Nicholas Spitzer. He is a distinguished professor in neurobiology here at UC San Diego. In fact, he was a founding member of not just neurobiology, but of this institution. Played a critical role in making it the number one institution in the land in neuroscience. Part of the way he did that, and one of the most important ways he did that, was his science, his actual research. And we're going to hear about that in a little bit. It's truly fascinating. But I want to just take a moment to mention some of the other things that he's done that's been so important. He helped bring the best and the brightest to UC San Diego, and part of that was the role model he provided, but it was also the other kinds of things he did. For example, he's been head of KIBM, Kavli Institute of Brain and Mind. And this institute lets people in diverse areas work together to pursue innovative ideas and break open new areas of research. It's been very exciting, very productive. He's contributed internationally. The Society for Neuroscience, with its thousands and thousands of members, played a major role in that. Headed up, for example, the creation of brainfacts.org, a website open to everybody, the public, and has been very successful, millions of hits every year. Numerous other activities as well we could talk about, but let me come back to his science, and that's what we're going to talk about a little bit later. This is what's been so remarkable, a true game changer. What Nick has done over the years is to take on established ideas that are really widely held in the field, dogma, you could say, and bring a creative view to it, the new insight into it, say, no, actually that's wrong, and to find the right way, and to show with hard work and insight and rigorous experiments and compelling arguments that this was the proper way to see things, this new way, and amazingly enough, convince the entire world of that, the entire community of that. Now, that is extremely rare and extremely difficult. So it's not a surprise that he's a member of the National Academy of Science now, many other awards, accomplishments, recognition. How did you get into neuroscience? How did you choose this as your career?
Thank you, Darwin. It was an interesting trajectory, I think. I started out as an undergraduate at Harvard, majoring in physics, following in the footsteps of my father, Lyman Spitzer. This didn't seem to fit quite right, so I switched a real pendulum swing into Slavic and linguistics, but I took a course, an introductory course in biology, taught by George Wald, and this really opened the door.
So it sounds like people could have major influence who are effective instructors. Did that happen at other points in your career?
Well, I think mentors can play a big role. They certainly played a big role for me. George was a Nobel laureate for his important work on the nervous system, and he could have sold any one of us a used car. This man was an incredible salesperson, in addition to being an amazing scientist. And he turned me on to neuroscience. I went and worked in the laboratory of John Dowling at Harvard, who was a young assistant professor. And at that point, the hook was in, and I was on the line, and it was downhill from there. I really wanted to go into neuroscience.
Given who you were moving among and where you were and everything, medicine ever cross your mind? A medical career, maybe?
Yeah, you bring up an interesting point. I actually went off to medical school. I went to Harvard Medical School for a couple of years, but I realized I was more interested in the discovery process, and I thought a better way to do that would be to switch to the PhD program there in the new Department of Neurobiology, where we both worked at different times. This was a legendary department, the first department of neurobiology in the country, chaired by Stephen Kuffler, who was, again, an extraordinary scientist and a fabulous mentor. So mentors can make a big difference, and I think that's something that both of us have seen over our careers here at UC San Diego.
People in the place, and I appreciate even more now what you were able to do here at UC San Diego. We'll come to that in a minute. Did you ever have any go abroad for any experience?
Yes, actually, and I try to persuade people in my lab to broaden their educational experience by going on after they've been at UC San Diego to seek experience elsewhere around the globe. I went to University College in London for my postdoctoral work, worked there with Ricardo Milady, another amazing mentor. And that set me up then to compete for jobs back here in the States.
How did it come about you came to UC San Diego? Because those were beginning days when you came out.
It's amazing how that worked out. I remember John Singer, a legendary faculty member here at UC San Diego, was at a meeting in London, and he had learned that I was on the job market. Steve Kuffler had put him up to this, and he came to see me. He said, "Nick, let's go out and have a pint at the pub," and we went to a local pub near the lab, and he was a wonderful salesperson for UC San Diego in those early days. So I visited other institutions, but San Diego really had the promise for growth and the excitement of a young campus that I think captured a lot of people at that time.
What can we learn from that, from your experience, about how to best position ourselves to move forward and continue to be on the cutting edge, to be the leading institution?
UC San Diego has been remarkable in its relatively short history in terms of its growth and its reputation, as you point out. I think a big part of that has been the very keen emphasis on the research and the support for research at all levels, the fundamental basic science research and the translational and clinical aspects of the research. And of course, we are here for the undergraduates, and I think for them, providing this research environment is an additional attraction for them to come to UC San Diego.
Maybe now would be a good time to give the audience some sense of what you have done in science, what your experience in science has been.
Well, it's been a wonderful ride, and I want to emphasize that I think it's far from over. I'm still very interested in pursuing the objectives that we've developed. But I got very interested in the way in which nerve cells begin to send their electrical signals at early stages of development. This was exciting. It led us to a discovery in the developing nervous system that the way neurons communicate with one another can change in response to both electrical activity and to experiences in the environment. And so this was a very interesting start on a very nice trajectory.
Well, I remember all during my training in neuroscience, neurobiology, and up until your work, really, that was not the case. You were hardwired. You're a neuron. You make this kind of signaling molecule, or that neuron, you do that. You can make more, you can make less, but you can't change.
You changed that view. Well, you're right, Darren. In the early days, I too was taught that neurotransmitters, the molecules that neurons use to communicate with one another, are a fixed part of what a neuron has and does. Paul Patterson and Story Landis, mutual friends of ours, had shown in the early 80s that in culture, in a dish, nerve cells could change their transmitters, and there was some suggestion that during development that could occur as well. But we went on to look in the adult animal, in the mammalian brain, and were able to show that experience could lead to changing of neurotransmitters, these neurotransmitter molecules, in the brain of adult mammals with corresponding changes in behavior. And I think that really has opened up a floodgate of opportunities for very interesting questions that we want to try to answer, both about fundamental science, but also about potentially treatments for disease.
No, that's phenomenal. I remember, of course, that early work by Paul and Story. But I remember not only was it in cell culture, and you said, well, is that real, it's cell culture? But also, those were neurons that kind of, in their lifetime, had the opportunity to make those choices anyway. This is fundamentally different. And you bring up a point I want to return to, that you can change it in the adult. Now, for people my age, that's very encouraging, that there's still hope, you know. But but to be able to change, you know, for hardcore geneticists, and I grew up that way in molecular biology, you're kind of wired in your original genome, one thought. This suggests that you are pliable, available, that you can respond to inputs, even in adulthood, fundamentally changing what your brain can do. I mean,
This is true. I think we've known for a long time that how we are, what we are, who we are is a combination of nature and nurture, of nature, the genes, nurture, the experience growing up. But it's really reassuring and I think very interesting to find that there's additional ways in which the old dog can learn new tricks. And this kind of plasticity that we're talking about together here is rather different from the forms of plasticity that we've known about for many years that involved other kinds of changes in the nervous system.
You've played a role in part through KIBM, but also in addition to that, in the National Brain Initiative of Obama's, but also CalBrain. Tell us a little bit about that.
This is a very exciting time for neuroscience, Darren, as you know, and you've contributed to this as well. Not only do we have the National Brain Initiative from President Obama, but in addition, we have the California CalBrain Initiative here in the state. And on the campus, our Chancellor, Pradeep Khosla, has established the Center for Brain Activity Mapping with our colleague Ralph Greenspan at the head. So new opportunities here for exciting discoveries.
In communicating to people and to reaching out for them to understand this brainfacts.org, that seems, say a bit about what that is.
You know, I think this has been very important, Darren, and I think we as scientists haven't paid enough attention to outreach and communication to the public about our science and what it can do for the public. And so in general terms, outreach is very important. In the past, we did this in person or we did it with printed material and reached effectively a limited audience. Now, with the internet and the web, as we describe it, the opportunity to reach around the globe to India and to China and to South America is extraordinary, and BrainFacts is achieving this. So it's been wonderful to be able to contribute at that level.
Well, let's return to another issue that came up. You talk about the work that you've done, and one sees the implications, the flexibility in the adult brain even and so on. It makes me want to ask about increasingly a popular area of science now, translational research, applications of this in useful ways.
Well, you're really touching on a key issue here. Neurological disorders are one of the biggest economic and emotional burdens for our species around the globe. And we are really not doing as well as we'd like to in terms of treatments for these disorders. Many of these disorders are disorders of neuronal circuits. How does the circuit work? We think now that this kind of flexibility of circuit behavior, switching of neurotransmitters, may lie actually at the basis of some of these neurological disorders. And so we and your lab as well, Darwin, are now really going flat out, trying to test this hypothesis and see if indeed this is the case.
So, in fact, test to see if it's the case, and then there might be things that therapeutic strategies one could...
Exactly. All therapies start with some kernel of knowledge about what has gone wrong. And if we can understand how the transmitters inappropriately changed from one to the other, from an excitatory transmitter that excites neurons to one that perhaps inhibits the neurons, then we could intervene and perhaps try to prevent that or try to reverse it to provide useful treatments and potentially cures for some of these neurological disorders.
So that could have a big impact on society. Let me use that as an opportunity to ask from the perspective of California, of us here, CBAM, quite wonderfully the state legislature is stepping up and making possible. What do you see as the benefits to people in this state from the kind of work that's going on in neuroscience here at UC San Diego?
UC San Diego, I think, is I'll say, the leader in the state of California, although California has a wonderful, rich source of neuroscientists, perhaps more than any other state in the nation. I think there are three benefits that will come to people here in the state. The first is really one that often gets overlooked and ignored, and that's to satisfy people's curiosity about how the brain really works. What's going on between my ears? How does this actually function? And I think we're going to provide some exciting answers there over the next decade or two, and beyond, of course. The second, I think, exciting benefit for people of the state comes to identification of the problems with neuronal circuits and the ability to intervene and actually provide treatments and cures for people, of course, in the state, but even more widely around the country and around the world. And finally, I think a third opportunity here for this set of brain initiatives is that it will lead to the development of new tools with which to study the brain. The engineers here at the Jacobs School are now working hand in glove with neuroscientists through the Center for Brain Activity Mapping to develop these new tools and test them. This will then lead to the formation of companies. Companies will employ people. This will lead to more jobs for the people in the state of California. And at a very fundamental and practical level, this will stimulate the economy of the great state of California. So multiple levels here at which I think a big impact will be felt.
Very interesting indeed. And, you know, you reminded me as you're mentioning that about the interactions of these different groups. That's exactly what KIBM does with the nano engineers and the biologists and the neuroscientists all interacting, opening up, making new tools, doing things that, new possibilities now because of that interaction. And of course, it's, you know, drawing people here from all over the world. They want to come here, they want to work, they want to add their creativity.
Yes,
to
yes.
It, so,
actually, yeah. You bring up an important point, I think, here, which is that the Kavli Institute for Brain and Mind, the KIBM, has, among other things, done a lot to stimulate the cross-fertilization across the campus, the cross-interaction of groups that had not in the past really seen much interaction. And so one has the brain people, people like you and me who are studying neuroscience and neurology. And then we have the mind people who are the cognitive scientists and the psychologists who are really looking at the same structure, but from a different point of view. And so often in the past, these have been two siloed groups, different silos, not really interacting. And now I think KIBM, along with others, has been very helpful in bringing these groups together.
Very good. What do you think is most important? How can we most effectively, in the future now, again, recruit the best and the brightest here to keep this tradition going, to take us to the new frontiers?
Well, this is always a challenge, and we're always trying to position ourselves best to capture the brightest young minds and bring them here to La Jolla,
you
to UC San Diego.
I forgot to mention that as though Nick doesn't have enough to do, while he's doing all the rest of it, he's also chair of a search committee for two senior positions here and a junior one. So hands on here. Tell us.
Well, I think it flows, as we've discussed earlier this afternoon, it flows from the kind of excellence that we've fostered over multiple decades here now in La Jolla. It comes from identification of people, I would say, you know, frankly, darn like the two of us, who are passionate about what we do and what they do, and who are committed to the highest standards of creativity and research and communication of the findings of that research, not only to students and postdoctoral colleagues here on the campus, but also to the world at large. And UC San Diego is already doing that. We can do that more, and we can do that better. And I'm very confident that the university will continue to grow in stature and in impact.
It takes effort and judgment, as you're demonstrating and have seen. It also takes resources to be able to attract them, let them get going, and compete with the other institutions. So these are always challenges for UC San Diego and the whole UC system.
They are. And in the current era, when federal funding is perhaps less exuberant than it has been in our past, it's all the more important to be able to reach out to foundations, to the business community, and to others to engage them and help them see how participation with the research enterprise here at UC San Diego can pay big dividends down the road, not only for individuals, but for the public and for the state at large.
Absolutely. Thinking and communication in both directions.
Yes.
Makes a big difference.
Yes.
If you had advice to offer or insight to offer to either speaking in part, not just as a scientist and a professor, but even as a parent, affecting young people who are making decisions, as you did, as you thought about the various careers, even medicine or physics, something, what advice would you offer them about making a choice, a career choice?
I think the most important thing, and I, with my for children. This has certainly been an emphasis that I've put out to them to try to identify something that really captures you. So try to find something about which you are truly passionate, something that you really want to do, some place where you can see that you can define a goal, a set of goals for yourself, and then work hard to achieve them. I think that's fundamental for success. And then I think one wants to perhaps, once that's been identified, figure out the best way and try to plan forward 5 or 10 years so that one imagines where one is going to be at different points along the way, postdoc to junior faculty member if indeed academia is the chosen route, and then on from there. These are some of the considerations that I think one wants to be thinking about, even when one is still at an early stage in one's thinking about one's life.
As you went through this long, very productive scientific trajectory of research, were you yourself surprised at various times? How can this be? That can't be. I mean, that sort of surprise that you would then revisit it, and how did you address it when that would happen?
There were a number of surprises along the way through the career, Darwin, and it's in a case like that, one always goes back and repeats the experiment again and again and again just to make sure that there's not some sort of artifact, some complication here that's leading to a fluke in terms of the results. But I confess that when I began my career as an assistant professor here on the faculty at UC San Diego, I had in mind the idea that molecular biology, which, as we both experienced, was really taking off as a fabulous tool for biological and life sciences, that there was more to it than that, and that the electrical signals of the brain that are so important for us as young people and as adults could have some influential role at the very early stages of development. So I was predisposed to have an eye out and to be aware and to think that maybe something like that would show up. But it was, frankly, a complete surprise when we found that transmitter switching could occur in the adult mammalian brain. That was something that I did not expect to find. But we're now convinced, and I think convincing people, that it is in fact the case.
No, that's remarkable, and I've seen this about you and admired it over the years, how different from many people, when something is totally out of line from what you expected, you just say, oh, no, it's a mistake, and throw it out and keep going. We say, well, how could that be? And then to pursue it, test it in the way you have, that makes all the difference, yeah. Given the path you've taken, if you now could be given the choice of saying, because of some power that be, that you can be given an answer to some large question, what would that large question be in science? And with a large question that you could come up with the answer.
Ah, darling.
Don't give us the answer.
No. You do know how to put them. I think that if I were given this opportunity to have a question answered, it would be this. I would dearly like to know whether neurotransmitter respecification, this process of changing neurotransmitters, this transmitter switching process, lies at the heart of a variety of different neurological disorders, let's say depression, let's say addiction, a number of disorders that many people are currently working hard to understand with a view to treatments and cures. I would very much like to know whether or not transmitter respecification and switching is involved there. And the reason is that would then take a career devoted to fundamental neuroscience and then lead it to a translational outcome that would be hugely beneficial with further work for healthcare of our society. And that would be deeply satisfying if that could happen.
That would be wonderful. That would be combining everything from basic research, translation, and having an impact, a real impact on people across the... No, that would be very... I understand why that would be so appealing. If you had a moment and you're reaching out to people, what messages would you like to communicate Anything that you haven't already maybe mentioned? Anything else?
Well, I want to come back to the outreach piece because I think that is tremendously important. It's been overlooked. I think scientists in the past decades have taken it for granted that what we do in our research is important and that it ought to be financially supported by society. But I think we've taken all that for granted, and that's not good enough. I think it's very important for all of us to be able to communicate what we do and why we do it and what the potential outcomes of it are. And I look forward as I go along to continuing efforts to try to achieve those goals. In the end, people who can see that science is beneficial for society, as I think can be very well documented over the ages, I think that they will continue their enthusiasm and their support for it, and that will be, frankly, important for the future of what we do.
Absolutely. You know, I should mention, because I know you won't mention it. Well, first, I mean, you do. This is part of what motivated you, and brainfacts.org is motivated you and other things I know. But I'll mention something that I know you won't, but I can, and that is I share a course with this guy, and I've watched him teach over the years, and I don't think there are many people who are as passionate and committed about what he's teaching and able to motivate the people in the audience accordingly. Students who think, oh, I'm going to medical school, but I have to take this class, or I think, is this interesting? And they get fired up. They come up afterwards and they talk to him and they even say this, motivated and fired up because the example provided the passion, the insight, and the information. And that moves people. And you can tell it in their applause at the end, which is just overwhelming. And I've been impressed again and again by that, Nick.
Well, Darren, I have to say, I have to return the compliment here because you and I have taught this course now for I can't say how many years, but it has to be pointed out that the same needs to be said of you. And I think it's our joint partnership here that has been the huge success that it has been.
It's been a wonderful partnership. Terrific scientist, Nick Spitzer. It's been a pleasure to have you on Profiles in Discovery.
Thank you, Darren.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.